Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in for another edition of the Battleground State Report. As always, go to Battleground State News. That's Battleground State News. I know it's long, but it's worth the typing. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web. Battleground State News on Facebook, where each week we give you an insight into what's happened over the course of the week that may have an impact on the 2020 elections, both the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House, and, of course, the presidential election that looms big. You're seeing a lot of activity with more Democrats getting into the race for president, but are they going to have appeal to voters in the battleground states? And that's part of what we talk about each weekend as we focus on these 17 states.
It's 17 states, and why do we focus on them? Because, well, we know for sure that there will be 20 states that will go red and will vote to reelect President Trump in 2020. You know, Texas and Arkansas and Tennessee, Nebraska, the Dakotas. Clearly, they're going to be red states. And then there are 13 states that we know are going to be blue. They're going to vote for whoever the lunatic?
the lunatic fringe.
In fairness, Joe Biden may not be a full-blown lunatic, but, you know, he's sort of in that crowd. But most of the other ones are. But there would be California, New York, and, those states. They're going to vote for the left-wing Democrat candidate. That means 17 states are in play in some form or fashion, varying degrees. 17 states could go for one or the other candidates at any given week. And we've tracked this, you know, for many months here now, which states are sort of really toss-ups and which states are sort of on the margin one way or the other. It changes slightly over each week. And that's why you listen to this program. And just kind of for the record, so you know what those 17 states are. In the Midwest, it's Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Indiana, Iowa, and Missouri. In the West, it's Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. In New England, it's Maine and New Hampshire. And in the South, it's Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. You know, Steve, one of the things that
And we sometimes talk about whether or not Georgia ought to be included.
Yeah. As
I still don't think it's there
not
yet.
Not quite there yet. But, yeah, this is why, again, you'll want to listen to this every week because there are a couple states that right now probably aren't battleground, but clearly Georgia is one that could. There's talk that because Beto O'Rourke, you know, only lost the Senate race by 3 points. Maybe there's talk. Maybe Texas could. I don't think it's there yet. Maybe. Could be. But you know what's interesting about this? So you notice there's Colorado just did something interesting this past week or so. And it was the first battleground state to do this. There have been a proposal in state legislatures when they're controlled by Democrats to change the way to join this sort of national contract which says that that particular state will agree to cast its electoral college votes the way that the national vote goes. In other words, throwing away every element of the federalism that's the core of the Constitution that divides power between states and the national government. So far, I think about a dozen states have agreed to be part of this. They're all pretty much blue states, except now Colorado was the first battleground state, just got a little control of it by the Democratic legislature. They passed a law that they'll join it. I think the way that contract works is there's a few more states that would have to join it for it to kick in. But passed by
it. It's interesting. They only want to give up their votes counting as long as others jump off the cliff with them.
Yeah.
But if others don't go along with this, then Colorado votes would continue to count and Colorado
exactly.
would continue to be an electoral state that matters. But if enough other blue states agree, they'll let California and New York decide how their states
vote. That's what this, in essence, what they want to do. These are really being promoted by Democrats within battleground states. If they grab a little bit of power, a little bit of control of the state legislature and the governor's office, then they try to manipulate it so that their state's electoral college votes are given away to California and New York. That's what's going on in Colorado. And you'll see it maybe happening, the proposals in a few other battleground states. It'll be interesting to watch. I don't think it'll have any impact on the 2020 election. Maybe.
And it's going to be challenged in court. The interesting thing in Colorado is that Colorado has recall provisions where you can get a petition done and you can recall members of, say, the state Senate, the state House, and even the governor, and force an election this year or early next year on whether or not you can remove some of these people who pushed this, let's give up our votes to California and New York addition in Colorado. You're already seeing the petitions start to be gathered in Colorado to start trying to recall some of these senators and House members who pushed this legislation through and maybe take a shot at the governor, liberal former Congressman Polis, who's now the governor. And on top of doing this, they're also passing legislation with the Democrats in charge in Colorado narrowly to eliminate a lot of the oil and gas industry in Colorado that will devastate the Colorado economy. So this is opening a door to having some midterm elections with these recall provisions in Colorado that could also have some political impact, because all politics is local, on how things go in Colorado. It's sort of like this legislation where the Democrats have reached so far with killing babies in the womb and after birth, it has changed the dynamic as the Democrats overreached. You're seeing the same thing with this issue in Colorado, which may give Republicans opportunities both this year and into 2020 in a state that was at least purple, if not light blue.
And in Colorado, Senator Cory Gardner, Republican, kind of, you know, middle of the road kind of guy, he's up for a re-election in 2020. This is all going to play into where does Colorado vote in 2020?
And polls are not supporting elimination of the electoral vote when people realize they're giving up their votes to be directed by New York and California. Again, it's not going to play with the voters. It is playing to the wacky left. We'll talk more about it as the Battleground State Report continues in just a moment.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
Welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you, breaking down the political impact of various news and issues around the country. You know, foreign policy generally doesn't have a big impact in presidential races unless it's a negative. It's kind of like we've talked in the past that when the economy's doing well, people don't give you much credit. When it's doing badly and they want change, it has an impact in the political arena. International news, foreign policy is sort of the same way. In the absence of what people feel is a crisis that affects them, foreign policy successes don't really bring you big gains. The president this week focusing on the fact that ISIS in Syria has basically been eliminated. This caliphate that had 6 million people under their control at one point in Syria, eliminated thanks in large part by U.S. military forces and the commitment of President Trump to eradicate them. Now, again, they may be more dangerous now because they don't have a location. They go back to how do we create terror and terrorist attacks around the world. But a huge win for President Trump. But does it have any benefit at all to him on the political trail?
Well, it's not a negative to him because it's a huge accomplishment. But you're right. I mean, if you look at the mainstream media, and you compare the coverage of the battle against ISIS, compare it what they did with President Obama, which is very sympathetic, even though it was pretty much an utter failure on his part. Now, President Trump has really succeeded dramatically, far beyond what anybody thought before he was elected. I mean, it's just one of the signature accomplishments of the first 2 years of his presidency is to basically, so far, you'd say they've not killed them entirely, but not eliminated them, but just crushed them.
Well, eliminating their base of operations is huge. I think that if he's able to strike some sort of a deal to denuclearize North Korea, which right now is kind of hanging, looking a bit more dicey than it did a few weeks ago. But if he's successful there, that may have more impact because that looks like a bigger deal.
Yep.
If he's able to strike a trade deal with China over the next few weeks, as many expect, that opens the door to more U.S. goods, more agricultural products from Middle America being sold into China, that economic boost combined with the foreign policy success may have some impact. But I think it's got to put dollars into people's pockets before they really feel mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. But I think that that has worked to his, not to the negative, helped him a little bit. I think you're right about North Korea. You know, it's interesting. If you go back to the last term of President Obama, but when people were focused on what the big problem was, you know, I think they saw ISIS maybe as important a problem as North Korea. And as President Trump has succeeded in the American military, really neutering ISIS, at least for now, the North Korea situation, because, of course, the talks have begun. That is probably the number one issue. It's a number one, two issue probably internationally, because the other one is, I don't know if you saw this, the guy at Town Hall, Kurt, the former major in the Army, Kurt Schleicher, has written about this. Many experts say that militarily right now, if there were a war with China, that the United States is not in a good position to win it.
You know, the thing, though, is that before the first and second Gulf Wars, we were told that, you know, we were in a competitive military situation with Russia, the former Soviet Union, and that that we did not necessarily have a huge edge.
Yeah.
And that was really almost a proxy fight.
Yeah.
And we saw that our tanks, our air power, we were so far ahead. I mean, it's like if you rank the top 10 teams in the world in terms of military, you know, the U.S. was number one. But 2, 3, and 4 were way down the list. Because, you know, and I think one of the things that helped us have a stronger position in dealing militarily with other countries was they saw how far ahead our technology, how far ahead our military prowess was from the number two team. And that caused people to embrace and support U.S. policies in that region, you know, in the second Gulf War.
Because people embrace power.
They embrace power. And I don't know that we're behind the Chinese. They've stolen a lot of our technology. They're still trying to steal a lot of our technology. I think that, again, you've got to see these proxy fights to realize, okay, press releases and statements are one thing, but when the rubber meets the road or the tank tread meets the road, where are you really? Now, I'm not advocating we get into a fight somewhere just to show our stuff works better than theirs, but I'm not as concerned that militarily we're not continuing to make advances as some in the military.
And the question for us, really, because we're not military experts, but we do know a little bit about politics, is, you know, what's the political impact of this, of the rising power of China, and whether or not there may be a threat that we're currently not prepared to handle. I don't think from a public perspective, I don't think that, and particularly in these battleground states, I don't think there's a perception that President Trump is weak militarily because, you know, he's essentially his team has crushed ISIS, you know, for now. He's made progress with North Korea. Whether or not we're behind versus China, I don't think there's a sense that you remember when. Well, you may not remember this, but back when Nixon and Kennedy were running in 1960, Kennedy attacked Nixon because he was the vice president under Eisenhower for the, quote, missile gap between the U.S. and Russia. Well, that was kind of illusory, but that was a good talking point politically. It gave Kennedy some credibility. I don't know that any Democrat could look at the China situation now and say, well, President Trump has been asleep at the wheel and we've lost ground against China and therefore I can do a better job. I just don't see that anybody making that claim credibly. What do you think?
Nor that it's going to have a big impact on anybody's votes. I think, again, that people are not going to be going into this election, again, barring some sort of a major terrorist attack, barring some sort of a major incident, that foreign policy is going to be driving them. President Trump also had success. You know, he had great success on the campaign trail talking about NAFTA, sometimes talking beyond NAFTA, that, you know, we're losing jobs to China and Vietnam because of NAFTA. NAFTA was only between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. So some of what he was saying was appealing to people's emotional impulses of, yeah, we're losing jobs to foreigners under the guise of NAFTA. But now we've, quote, fixed NAFTA with China and Canada. He's not going to get any credit for that, I don't think, on the campaign trail. So I just don't think foreign policy is going to make much difference, which is one of the reasons you're not hearing any of the Democrats scrambling for their nomination, even mentioning foreign policy.
No, you're exactly right. With this one comment about foreign policy, and you just said it, you know, here we are, what are we, 20 months before the election, all the primaries. The primaries won't start for another 9, 10 months. Iowa will start in January or so. Always it's that curveball. It's that unexpected event that you can't predict that can have a huge impact on the outcome of the election. And so, you know, if there were to be an international incident, if, let's say, North Korea went bad and they started launching rockets again, what would the impact of that be? Would hurt or help President Trump? Probably a wash, I would think, right now. But
yeah, I don't think people's votes are going to change on that too much. I do think that if you've got national security that people feel like affects them. That's where I think the border wall, securing the border, I think that's a winning edge for President Trump.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the reasons they're putting so much effort into playing that card, because they recognize that poll-wise, it may not play big in San Francisco, but as we point out here on the Battleground State Report all the time, who cares?
Yeah.
How does it play in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Texas, Arizona? How does it play in the places that are most affected? And I think the border wall plays among the independent voters that Trump needs to win.
So let's hone in on that, because I think we both agree that the international arena is unless it's a big, big problem that comes up, is not going to have that much impact foreign affairs on the outcome of 2020. Did foreign affairs play differently in battleground states than in blue states or red states?
Well, I think it depends if you've got large military installations. I mean, again, in North Carolina, you got Fort Bragg.
Yeah.
That may have an impact there. But in the absence of sort of a sense that it affects people directly or affects them economically, I just don't think that the foreign affairs issues. I mean, you have Kazakhstan this week. Their president, 77-year-old president, decided to step aside. That's going to create some conflict between Russia and China. That doesn't have any impact on us.
Not a bit. Yeah, you're right.
And what's happening in Venezuela may have some impact only because of Venezuelans in Florida, South Americans in Florida.
That probably is the one international situation that could impact domestic policy is
because
in Florida.
It touches them personally.
Exactly right.
And most of these other
things. And that will help President Trump, because he's been very strong against the socialist dictator, unlike all the Democrats.
We'll be back with more of the Battleground State Report in a moment. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com, battlegroundstatenews.com, and Battleground State News on Facebook, and we'll be right back.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
Welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Each week we break down what's happening in the national news and how it will affect those battleground states and folks right here in this community as well. If you'd like to find out more, go to battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, battlegroundstatenews.com, Battleground State News on Facebook as well, and you can find links to stories throughout the course of the week that detail what's going on. You have more people getting into the political races. Governor Hickenlooper, former governor of Colorado, jumping in this week as a presidential candidate.
I can't wait for
Hickenlooper. You can feel the shockwaves. Kirsten Gillibrand decides to get in and got some pushback because, again, you've had Elizabeth Warren, I'm going to get me a beer, do a little video. You had Robert Francis Beto O'Rourke let people see him getting his teeth cleaned. Well, Kirsten Gillibrand, the New York senator, decided to show a little bit of her working out, doing some weightlifting. And some people have pushed back on that. Women, feminists have pushed back, saying she's trying to exploit her looks. In the left-wing wacko world of the Democratic Party, nothing you can do will escape criticism from somebody who's offended by something.
Well, look, I suppose this would be sexist, right, to say that, yes, she is better looking than
– than Pocahontas?
She's better looking than Beto O'Rourke. She's better looking than, Pocahontas, better looking than – well, you go down the list. But you know, I find it interesting.
And to our knowledge, she's never eaten salad with a comb like Amy Klobuchar and then made her assistants clean it.
But she is still at like about 1%. Emerson College came out with a poll this week. Now, let me also say it's a wrong kind of poll, but we'll go over it as well. It doesn't matter to do a national poll, right? It doesn't matter at all. because a national poll covers the blue states, which are going to be probably even more against Trump than they were last time. Irrelevant, because they're all going to be whether, you know, you win California by 1 point or 40 points. Doesn't matter. And so when you do these national polls, they're misleading. What you could do a poll of just the 17 battleground states, or even really more importantly, each individual state of those 17. Those are the polls that matter. But in this national poll, and it's not a big one, it's a sample of 487 across the country, and it's a margin of error of 4.4%.
That's about 8 people per state.
Yeah, it's like
now, granted, that might be half the people in Montana, but it's not even going to touch who's in, you know, major large population states. That's such a low number. That's a ridiculous poll.
Okay, so yeah, it's ridiculous, but no, it's all we've got right now. So we'll talk about it for a little bit. Bernie Sanders 26%, Joe Biden 26%, tied for first.
Name recognition.
Yeah, Joe slipping down a little bit. Kamala Harris 12%, Beto O'Rourke 11%. Pocahontas just can't break into double digits.
You know, she's had enormous national attention, but nobody likes her.
She's very unlikable. And she's, you know, she's got the problem of A, being unlikable, B, not being authentic in terms of just appearance, and C, the whole problem of the fake DNA, the fake claim that she was Native American. And she can't get over it.
You know, the problem
she's 8%.
The problem for the Democrats with Bernie Sanders is that he has his absolute true believers. Kind of like you had Ron Paul in the Republican Party. There was going to be that 5 to 7% that would die on this spot for Ron Paul. And you have Bernie Sanders, who has his feel the burn crowd.
Very loyal.
I don't know, is it 15, 20% of the Democratic Party? It's going to be enough that they will stick by him no matter what.
Yeah.
So how does that play in terms of him having the ability to decide who wins? He's going to have his block that at the Democratic convention, he'll be able to say, we're for this person. So what trade-off does Bernie get? How far left does that have to pull the Democratic Party as they go into the general election to get Bernie's votes to get the nomination? So typically you have the battle during the process of primaries. They're going to have a battle at their convention to see who gets Bernie's votes. And Bernie's votes are going to be dependent on how socialist you are.
Exactly.
That's not going to be helpful to the Democrats at that time.
So this is going to be very interesting because, you know, this criticism of Kirsten Gillibrand for trying to look pretty or in a video or not trying to for being pretty. That was the criticism from the
I mean, it wasn't like she was working out in a tight leotard. She had this oversized T-shirt, you know, doing some weights.
Yeah. So but what's interesting about this is Elizabeth Warren has just got to be going, I can't believe I'm only at 8%. And in sixth place, behind her abysmal fifth place at 8%, is the 37-year-old mayor, gay mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Pete Buttigieg. I guess that's how you...
Probably Buttigieg.
Buttigieg?
Yeah, I'd make it sound more Italian.
Buttigieg?
Buttigieg. Or Buttinsky.
He's at 3%. And all he did was announce and say, I'm gay.
Well, and Tulsi Gabbard, who actually is beautiful from Hawaii, man, I don't know what workout video she's going to do. She's probably like at 1%.
She's at 1%. And I'll go down the casting call here. Corey Spartacus Booker, 3%. He's tied for sixth place with Pete Buttigieg. Did say that again for me.
Buttigieg.
Okay. Yeah. That guy. Then, so at 1%. At 1%, all this crowd is at 1%. Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio, and he's the only Latino in this group, and he's at 1%. That's interesting, I think. And he's far-left socialist, you know, from a long line of socialists.
But again, most people have never even heard of these people.
Yeah, and Castro, even among Democrats today, maybe that doesn't help, you know.
Yeah, they think, is that Fidel's son, brother?
Yeah. Tied with...
Now, what is it? Justin Trudeau is reportedly, by some allegations, Fidel Castro's illegitimate son, speaking of actually being related to Castro. Yeah. Maybe Julian would be better if he started claiming he's related.
Yeah. Maybe, but guess who's tied with Julian? Of course, the 1% is like margin of error, but it's kind of fun to talk about it. So at 1% tied with Julian Castro is this guy, Andrew Yang.
Oh, he's the guy that's wanting to either ban or support circumcision, which is that. I can't remember which one it is.
I don't know where he stands on that one, but his big—
Yes, like circumcision is a major issue for most Americans as we vote for president.
Well, but he's the guy who's put this basic income, basic universal—
The $1,000 a month?
Universal basic income. He's that guy. And he's really, you know, he went to Brown University, the leftist— the most left wing of the Ivy Leagues, and went to Columbia Law School. And I don't know if really he worked actually for a SAT college entrance preparation firm for a while.
Did they take bribes? Those records. Did they take bribes?
I don't know. But he's a very, you know, he's at 36, 37, so he's at 1%. Amy, let me eat my salad with a comb. Klobuchar. By the way, is she going to ever get over— – she won't get over that branding, will she?
Well, that and talking about global warming at her announcement in a blizzard, you know, while she's standing out in the snow.
See, when people don't know you, you got a branding problem. It's just too funny that she ate her salad with a comb. She won't get over that. She's the senator who ate her salad with a comb, and then use it. I mean, not she ordered somebody to clean it off.
Clean my comb so I can use it again.
I mean, you know, it's just too funny. Too funny. That's what she's known for.
Again, this is the clown car that is the Democratic Party nominees. Yeah, any polling until we know more about who the nominee is and you actually put them head-to-head after people get to know. I mean, even the polls that say, okay, in Wisconsin, you know, Biden and Trump are head-to-head or Biden slightly— Nobody's focused on what Biden's for, what he stands for, and how he's going to run.
So the rest in this poll, Tulsi Gabbard from Hawaii, who's kind of had a tough campaign.
She's not even going to be able to get here because we're not going to have cars and planes.
I mean, 1%. Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, left wing, 1%. John Hickenlooper, 1%. And the aforesaid Kirsten Gillibrand, Democratic senator from New York, 0%.
But that was before her workout video. Now, if she'd been in a skimpy leotard, maybe she would have done better. But she was just lifting, you know, barbells or something on some bench. Anyway, these guys are desperately trying to get attention. Some of them are going to get good attention. Some of them are going to get bad attention. I mean, Kamala Harris, you know, with her background with Willie Brown and, you know, some of the policy issues that she's having. You know, just again, the issues are going to define them, I think, even worse than these personal characteristics. And ultimately, I think those issues don't play well in the battleground states. That's why we're here to talk about them. We'll be back with more of the Battleground State Report in a moment. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web, BattlegroundStateNews.com, and Battleground State News on Facebook. And we got one more segment. Come right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back in for the Battleground State Report. Again, as always, go to BattlegroundStateNews.com, BattlegroundStateNews.com, and we'll keep you up to date throughout the course of the week on what is going on. Yeah, as we head into the weekend, still the constant promise of the Mueller report is coming. You know, we've been hearing for weeks, months, the Mueller report is imminent. I think that it's kind of like some of these news items on the stock market. By this point, some of this stuff is baked in, that unless they come out with something that's just going to be mind-blowing and shocking, I think people are kind of going to ignore it to a large extent.
Yeah, it's already discounted by the markets, as they say, with, you know, economic news, and I think that's probably the case. You know, the expectation is it'll be sort of a political hit job with no legal teeth that would support the collusion allegation that started it.
You know, one of the things that was interesting is we're in the midst of March Madness. President Trump did not engage in pretending to have some interest in who's winning what. I mean, he'll host the teams when they come to the White House, whoever wins. But unlike Barack Hussein Obama, who fancied himself a big basketball star, which if you ever watched him play, you know, looked like, you know, he'd never touched the ball before. He always made a big deal about filling out his brackets. I do have to apologize to Tennessee fans everywhere. Not only is Dick Vitale predicting the Vols into the Final Four, Barack Obama has picked the Vols in the Final Four.
He has. I didn't know
that.
Talk
about the kisses of death.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Barack Obama is – he played high school basketball for his elite private school in Hawaii.
But didn't start.
Punahou. Didn't start.
If you're not starting for a little private school in Hawaii, you're probably not much of a star.
Yeah, but Gil, you are a I played varsity at SEC level elitist. You know that, right? Because you actually have some talent in basketball.
And I'm just going by when you watch him play. He looks like a guy who wears mommy jeans because he's a guy who wears mommy jeans.
Okay, you're making a true point. And by the way, the only sport that he ever has any, I don't know, element of talent was basketball. If you saw him throw a baseball, not a pretty
He's play. Not an athletic guy.
No. But he did play. He does like basketball.
Versus a Gerald Ford, who was a tremendous athlete.
Oh,
a college
athlete.
Football star,
yeah.
A great skier. And the media, promoted the idea that he was a clumsy, oaf, which couldn't have been further from the truth. They've tried to portray Barack Hussein Obama as some sort of a superstar athlete because he likes hanging out with athletes. I mean, he was on the sideline when Zion Williams' shoe blew out, and the media spent more time talking about the fact that he was there than about the injury and why the shoe blew out.
So the interesting thing about Donald Trump is – this is back, I think, to the authentic versus inauthentic politician. Now, not to say that Obama's interest in politics – in basketball – isn't authentic. I think he does have an interest in it. But Donald Trump's, an authentic guy. He doesn't really care about basketball.
And isn't willing to fake like he is.
There you hit it on the – he's not going to fake anything.
Yeah, he might have advisors that you need to fill out a bracket because that's what Americans are doing this week. I don't care about brackets.
It's like a business guy, a guy who succeeded in business, right? What you do is you focus in on what you want to do. You don't, everything else, it's out there. When I interviewed him for Breitbart, that's what I noticed about him. He zoned in on, I did an extensive interview about eminent domain and hit him with some hard questions. And, it's interesting. He really listened. He didn't like blow. He was listening to what I was saying and gave some good answers. I didn't agree with him on ultimately, but he made a good defense for his position on eminent domain. And that's the kind of guy, he's very focused. Business guys, they don't care about the stuff on the margins. What's the core issue? Let's go. Let's hit it. And for him, basketball brackets, not there. And so you get this, the obligatory ESPN. Will the president fill his brackets out? I think it had even started before President Obama, but it became almost like a ritual of state. The president fills out his basketball brackets.
Oh, with Obama, they'd have like these press conferences,
yeah.
Have the big bracket, and he'd be putting names into the bracket, and the media was breathlessly watching and live reporting.
And so, but the point is that because Trump is an authentic guy, he could care less about basketball. It's not his sport. He says, "Nah, I'm not going to fill
it out." He's a golfer.
He likes golf. He liked baseball. Remember he said that he played baseball as a
kid.
Likes
the Patriots because one of his friends owns them.
Yeah.
It's like
owned a football team, So, but I think, basketball is not his sport, and he's not going to fake it.
May watch some professional wrestling, but only for the card girls to walk out and tell us what round it is.
That I believe. hey, is she a supermodel?
Yeah, let's get this round over so those card girls come back out and hold up their sign with a number on it.
He's authentic. By that, I mean he appreciates supermodels. I mean, I think that's well established.
He's pro supermodel. We can give him that. But again, he's not this. I'm going to pretend to care about the brackets. And again, I don't think Barack Obama's brackets were very successful during his time. And frankly, it was more about getting people to pay attention to him than it was to kind of tie into what Americans do.
Back to the comparison of these presidential candidates on the Democratic side and how they play out in the battleground states. Now, more than like the blue states where, how you present yourself as politically correct matters. To me, I think that authenticity, real, understood, verifiable authenticity matters. And like him or not, like how he is, what his style is, whether you think it's offensive to be a big fan of supermodels as he is or whatever, he's an authentic guy. And I think that probably helps him in battleground states where authenticity is more important than ideology in some cases. And then, let's look at the Democrats. Who comes across as authentic in a way that somebody from Ohio will relate to.
You know, Biden would have been the only one that could have, you know, talked about brackets like a guy in a bar talking with folks about who you think's going to win.
Yeah.
The rest of the crowd would have been picking, you know, the Ivy League to win it all, and only one Ivy League team makes it in, and they were knocked out in the first round, Yale. So there's no connection that they have. And I think ultimately, while we're talking about the brackets, it's ultimately do they have a connection with that blue-collar worker who's worried about losing their job, who's worried about foreign competition. You've got one president who has spoken up to make America great again, to put America first, and you have all these other candidates wanting to supplant that president who want to put America down the list, who want to go back to the Barack Obama game plan of let's bow and scrape to foreign countries and apologize to foreign countries. I don't think this group is going to wean those make America great blue-collar Democrats from those battleground states to their side by attacking President Trump for wanting to make America great.
In the sort of our subjective battleground authenticity comparison of Trump in the battleground states, like him or not, he's authentic. I think in terms of authenticity, he's going to rate highly.
And again, keep it simple. Do you think we should kill babies after they're born? The Democrats say yes. President Trump says no.
Boom.
Do you think we should secure our border to keep illegals from flooding in and bringing drugs and gang members and terrorists and stealing our jobs? The Democrats say yes. President Trump says no.
Yeah.
The economy's doing better than it was before President Trump. Should we go back to the old days? Should we be Venezuela or should we be a prosperous America? If they will keep it simple, should be a pretty simple win.
Yeah. And now, interestingly enough, let's Joe Biden aside, which he can fake authenticity pretty well. Maybe he is authentic. I don't know. But of course, it's
authentically creepy.
Plugs is authentic.
Groping air. Young girls. Yeah, he's very authentic.
But I'm looking at this in terms of authenticity that will reach, say, independence. I'm looking at this crowd, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Beto O'Rourke, Elizabeth Warren. Well, let's just stop at Elizabeth Warren. There's no way. No way.
You don't think a Massachusetts liberal is going to play in middle America
than
the last Massachusetts liberal? Dukakis, who got drubbed?
And someone who does a video that says, I'm going to have me a beer. She flunks the authenticity test. Looking at this, in terms of authenticity, the gay 37-year-old mayor of South Bend is authentic. I think that's pretty authentic, right?
He is who he is.
Yeah. But again, that's not going to appeal to independents who are undecided in battleground states, I don't think, even though he's from Indiana, which we put, in the 17 battleground states.
If I'm living in Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana, Missouri, North Carolina, if I'm worried about losing my job to illegal aliens, does the fact that that a candidate is running who wants to, embrace the gay, lesbian, transgender agenda help me one bit?
No, not at all. He's authentically marginalizing himself, really, by just making that the big issue. He might say it's not my big issue, but that's all he ever talks about.
I mean, Ocasio-Cortez may be very authentic in believing whatever she spouts and spews on any given day, but it's not necessarily going to play with people who don't subscribe to those views and viewpoints, other than those little millennials that are tromping up and down in New York and California.
I mean, I'm looking at this roster and I'm trying to think, well, who would reach the independent, undecided,
blue-collar Democrat in Youngstown, Ohio.
I'm not seeing it. Maybe Beto, but I don't know. He looks kind of like
got that. I'm young. I'm charismatic. I climb up on bar stools and speak. Standing on benches and bars and
that's cool,
tables.
Right? Yeah.
He's got that energy that they think he's a white version of Barack Obama.
But again.
Obama was lightning in a bottle, had charisma, had a uniqueness, and there was a desperation by the Democrats to get back in power. The Democrats do have that desperation to beat Trump, but their desperation to beat Trump has also been a product of embracing the most bizarre policy positions.
Yeah.
I mean, again, are Americans staying up late at night worrying about whether or not we have an electoral college or not? Are they staying up at night worrying about the issues that the Democrats are talking about? And I don't think they are.
No, I don't think they are. They're thinking about, Is my job safe? Are my kids safe? Are the schools good?
Is our community safe?
Yeah.
You know, are drugs pouring across the border that could kill us all? Are terrorists and gang members coming across the borders that could hurt us and kill us? I mean, there's issues that really affect people's lives. And fighting about the Electoral College and let's stack the Supreme Court with five new members to try and push our liberal left-wing agenda. Oh, and by the way, let's kill babies just before they're born and after they're born.
Yeah, I mean,
none of those things are going to cater to the American people.
And even if we looked at this poll that Emerson College did, we talked about it in the earlier segment. And so on the national side, again, it's just a national poll. So you got heavy California, heavy New York. And in their poll of 1,153 voters across the country, they have basically a statistical tie between Trump and everybody, except Biden had a 10-point lead. It's just that those numbers are irrelevant because they need to be looking at the battleground states, and I think it's going to be very different there. Right now, to me, it looks like Trump is in good position to win re-election.
And if you're a white, blue-collar Democrat— Youngstown, Ohio, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Is reparations going to be the issue that's going to bring you back to the Democratic Party? If you're an Hispanic in South Florida, is reparations, raising your taxes to give it to black people who never were slaves, going to win your vote to the Democrat? I just, again, keep talking the issues, folks, because I don't think those are going to be working for you. We'll be back again next week. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web. That's BattlegroundStateNews.com. Battleground State News on Facebook. You have a great week. We'll be back next weekend.